Hello everyone, my name is Abigail Baxter. I'm a graduate student with Virginia Tech, and today I'll be talking about my research on the ability of a novel fertilizer to supply manganese to soybeans. So to get started, manganese is an essential micronutrient for plant growth. It's involved in various plant functions, but more specifically, it's involved in the photosynthetic processes of the plant. It's an important enzyme activator, and it's also thought to be involved in the assimilation and translocation of nitrogen throughout plant tissue. In soils, manganese is commonly deficient in areas of high pH, so anything greater than 6.5. It's also tending to be deficient in calcareous soils or in coarse textured soils where it can be rapidly leached out of the system. In areas experiencing these conditions or in plants that have these manganese deficiencies, it's most likely characterized through the expression of interveinal chlorosis, which is pictured in the topmost photo there. But it can also be expressed through various forms of tissue degradation, such as leaf spotting or, in very severe cases, tissue necrosis. So commonly, when addressing these micronutrient deficiencies, the method to use is the foliar application, just spraying directly onto the leaf tissue and addressing that directly. However, this is more of a time sink than the one-time application at the beginning of the season and requires a regular checks of your fields to make sure there isn't any missed sites or long-term tissue degradation that could affect your yields. So in the coastal plain areas of Virginia, where these coarse textured soils are very common and manganese deficiency tends to be a problem, foliar application tends to be the method to use, but there also are soil-based recommendation methods. However, they're not as popular due to the higher application rates demanded and the low residence time of manganese in the soil. So in this study, we were looking to test the ability of a novel fertilizer, which is a granular KCl coated in a micronutrient powder, as an alternative method to foliar application. It would be a one-time application at the beginning of the season, and we wanted to see if this could sufficiently meet manganese needs for soybeans in these areas. To investigate this objective, we have two different studies, the first of which will be the greenhouse study, and I'll talk about that first, and then followed up with what we've been finding in the field study over the past two seasons. So to get started in the greenhouse, there were three different treatments. We had the uncoated potassium chloride, which was applied at a rate of about 67 kilograms per hectare of potassium. That's the topmost picture you see there. The second treatment was the coated potassium chloride, or this is the novel product. It's the bottommost picture you see there. It was also supplied at a recommendation rate of about 67 kilograms per hectare of potassium. And at this recommendation rate, manganese was applied at a rate of about 6.7 kilograms per hectare. The final treatment was a control. This was a true control, so there are no additional amendments added to that soil. And for all of these treatments, they were replicated three times across five different sampling periods. We had the 2 days, 7 days, 14 days, 30 days, and 60 days after germination, or emergence, excuse me. And this was all conducted over two different soil types. The soils in question are the Bojack sandy loam and the Jagston fine sandy loam. They're both acid sandy soils collected from research stations affiliated with Virginia Tech. They were chosen based on previous history of manganese deficiency, as well as recent soil test reports that showed manganese deficiency as well, which is highlighted in red here. They were also chosen to compare the effects of organic matter on the effectiveness of the product. Organic matter is known to readily chelate manganese, which can limit its availability for plant uptake. So for the purposes of this study, we'll refer to the Bojack soil at the 1% organic matter as the low organic matter soil, and the Dragston soil at around 4% organic matter as the high organic matter soil. In the greenhouse, pots were arranged in a completely randomized design across the workbench, and they were all contained in a private plastic catch plate to eliminate any variability from leaching. Pots were maintained at moisture at 70% field capacity by weight, and this is checked every 2 to 3 days. At the sampling times mentioned previously, we destructively sampled pots for soil and above ground tissue, and soils underwent three different extraction methods. Malic 1, which is standard for the Virginia Tech soil testing laboratory. We also did the Malic 3, which is a stronger, more widely used soil extraction method for multi-nutrient analysis. And then we also did a weak calcium chloride extraction to more readily simulate the conditions of the root zone. for above ground plant tissue, which we did total above ground plant tissue for biomass purposes, but that was extracted using nitric acid microwave digestion, and both the soil and tissue extraction methods were analyzed using ICP. The Malik 1 here is highlighted in red because it's the data I'll be showing today so that you're not overwhelmed by the sheer number of graphs that I could supply. But it's representative of the data and trends that we found across our different extraction methods. So this will just be representative of what we found. So moving on to the results, before I get too into them, just to set the stage here, the y-axis will always be the nutrient concentration in milligrams per kilogram, and the x-axis will always be time. In this case, it should be days after emergence. Also, for any of my bar graphs that you'll see, the coated product will be outlined in that nice little pink coating there to keep everyone on board with how it's presented here. So to get started, you can see across the entirety of the experiments all the way up to the 60-day time period for both low and high organic matter soil, the coated product is supplying significantly greater amounts of manganese to the soil compared to the other two treatments. And that range of additional manganese ranges from 8 to a maximum of around 20 milligrams per kilogram, and that range was seen in both the low and high organic matter soils. Additionally, the lack of significant difference seen between the control and the uncoated KCl across each sampling period indicates that there was no significant salt effect that might have boosted the manganese numbers that we're seeing from the coated product. So that increase there is from the coating itself and not an influence of the salt effects causing residual manganese to become more available. This is the above ground tissue data for manganese with the low organic matter soil to the left, the high organic matter soil to the right. Yeah, and the yellow bar you see up there is denoting the minimum sufficiency concentration levels for manganese, or for soybeans, excuse me. It's around 20 milligrams per kilogram, but that's based on the uppermost trifoliate sampling method. So just as a reminder, we did total biomass sampling just to make sure we had enough to actually analyze, but that's just a guideline to show where these numbers are falling. So in the low organic matter soil, you can see that the coated product is supplying significantly greater amounts of manganese to the plant tissue as well compared to the uncoated KCl in the control soil. While those significant differences between treatments are not seen in the higher organic matter soil. Additionally, you can see that the level of nutrient content in the low organic matter soil plants is noticeably higher than what we're seeing in the high organic matter soil there, with the low organic matter soil having maximum concentrations around 100, 120 milligrams per kilogram, while the higher organic matter soil maxes out around 40 milligrams per kilogram. We believe that's a reflection of the influence of organic matter and in influencing manganese availability, with the higher organic matter soil having much more chelation and limiting that luxury uptake that we're seeing from the low organic matter soil. But in conclusion, from the greenhouse experiment, we saw it was a strong proof of concept that the fertilizer we were looking at could be a good, suitable potential alternative for foliar application and addressing these micronutrient deficiencies, as it increased significantly the manganese in the soil across both soil types, across all different extraction methods, and in cases of the different organic matters for plant tissue, it met sufficiency in both plants, and you can see that significant uptake under lower organic matter soil conditions. So following this, we went right into our field study, looking at the same objective, but now seeing if it could be applied in real world situations. So for today, I'll be talking about the 2016 data, but it's a 2-year study, so we do have data coming in from the 2017 season. And this study was conducted over 3 different locations, all of which are located in the coastal plain region of Virginia. So we have the Eastern Shore, which will be denoted as ES, Tidewater area, that's TW, and Prince George will be denoted through PG. In this experiment, we have the same 2 soils we saw for the greenhouse study. The Bojack soil is from Eastern Shore, so ES, at low organic matter. The Dragston soil is from Tidewater, so that's our high organic matter soil. And then there's the addition of a 3rd soil here, the Bonneau loamy sand, which also had manganese deficiencies in its recent soil test reports, as long as a history of a manganese deficiency. And it's comparable in organic matter to the Eastern Shore soil there. So for treatments, in 2016, we had 5 treatments. They were replicated 4 times per site. We had a controlled treatment, the uncoated potassium chloride, a foliar application, and then the coated potassium chloride. The 5% and the 8% denote the amount of manganese that makes up the nutrient composition there. And so the 5% coated Grandol, with Grandol being a neutral agent, it's a filler agent, and it's to, we wanted to see the effectiveness of the coating itself without the presence of that salt-based fertilizer. So those were our 2016 methods, or our treatments. And in 2017, we added the additional 8% coated treatments to see if that boost would be enough to negate leaching effects in the field. For sampling, soils were sampled once a month to the 6-inch depth from planting to harvest. And plant tissue was collected around the V8 stage of soybean growth and development and around the time of foliar application. Extraction methods were the same from the greenhouse study, and we also used the same analysis procedures. And for this presentation, again, I will just be presenting my Malic 1 data along with some tissue data for you. So for the field data for Malic 1, this is 2016. Once again, the nutrient concentration is on the y-axis, and the time of sampling is on the x, and that's in months this time, with your high organic matter soil at the top and your lower organic matter soils toward the bottom of the screen. But when we went to go look at treatment differences, we did not find any significant differences between treatments at any individual month, but there were some interesting changes with time that we wanted to investigate. So we averaged treatments by month and then graphed them as such to show differences over time. And you can see that the trends in how the manganese is fluctuating is very similar across sites. You see that increase from planting and within the first month before it tends to start plateauing out until harvest around November. But the similar trends we're seeing here seems to indicate that this is more of a response to seasonal environmental conditions as opposed to treatment conditions that we've been applying. So we haven't been able to see any of that significant increases as we saw in the greenhouse. For the above ground tissue manganese, we also didn't see any consistent responses by treatment across any of our sites. However, minimum sufficiency levels were met across all sites for all treatments. The Prince George site, one of the lower organic matter soil sites, is the only one that showed significant difference by treatment, with the foliar application showing significantly greater amounts of manganese in their tissues compared to the uncoated and the coated KCL applications. But for the most part, there wasn't a consistent response there across treatments either. We also wanted to look at harvest and soybean quality data. However, again, unfortunately, we weren't able to see any significant treatment differences as we had hoped. So the table here is summarizing by site, with the Tidewater location having a significant, this isn't statistically analyzed, but having a noticeably higher amount of yield compared to the other two sites at 67 bushels per acre compared to my lower organic matter sites that ranged from 21 to 15 bushels per acre. That's believed to be directly tied to water stress conditions. From that topmost picture, that's from Tidewater. Those beans were up to my waist by the time we were getting towards the end of the season, but my other two sites, they barely passed my knee. So it was a very visible difference in constraints between those locations, but not so much a treatment effect. And the quality data for protein and oil were within similar ranges across sites, with percent protein ranging from 36 to 38%, and percent oil ranging from 15 to around 18.7%. But overall conclusion so far is that despite some pretty exciting and dramatic responses in the greenhouse, they are not translating successfully into the field. However, we are meeting minimum sufficiency levels for these soybeans. We didn't notice any deficiencies throughout the growing season in 2016. But it'll be interesting to see how the full season of 2017 compares as well with those additional treatments, especially in terms of plant uptake. And also, any variations that we saw in yield were most likely not a result of treatments themselves, but as it's a reflection of the water availability and water stress between locations. I would like to thank my funders, the Whitehurst and Associates, for giving me the opportunity to be here and do my research, and along with my advisor and my committee members for all their guidance, and for the AREC extension teams and my family and friends for putting up with my sense of badgering and, you know, assisting me throughout my time here. Thank you for listening.
Quick question.
Oh, it's a manganese sulfate.
Okay.
sorry, what?
For
boron?
Mm-hmm.
So the boron data I didn't show today. I was kind of hoping no one would point that out, but that's okay.
I saw soil boron
Okay, yeah. So the boron data, we did look at that, but none of that data came back for any statistical significance for the greenhouse and in the field study. The boron there is a component of the binding agent. It wasn't actually a purposeful addition in the product itself. So we were investigating to see if that would be a potential source for boron, but that data was inconclusive and didn't show any significant differences.
Okay, I think we guys wrap that up for now. We'll move on to the next speaker. Thanks, Abigail.